and sometimes it's power buttons. Who knows?
Everybody needs a power button.
Every.
Thank you, Mistress V, for making that clear for us.
You are so welcome.
I'm not going to ask about where your button is located. All right, so since we're talking about buttons, I can't go on with this bit.
No? The shiny red start button, you know, the one that says begin broadcast, and you think, yeah, we're going to just catch somebody on this. And no, you've been the one who's been talking.
Okay, I admit, I got. What do you want from us? All right, you got me. I don't know what to do. You took this in a very... Man,
You are so sheltered.
Right now, everything that every sentence I put together in my mind, there's a... That, you know, phrasing, is kind of, it happens after it, so I'm just not really sure how to put words together.
So you're saying that I am now part of the problem and not part of the solution?
You're not part of the problem.
Veronica, you are the entire problem. You were always part of the problem. You made that very clear when we asked you to, you know, come on here.
I'm not going to behave.
Yeah, we know.
And now you're complaining that I'm not?
Howdy, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Dead Curmudgeon Society.
Accurate.
Howdy, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Dead Robot Society.
I probably should share the link for this show, shouldn't I?
Paul E. Cooley, probably why nobody's on in the crowd yet, because nobody knows where the link is, because Terry can't do his job.
Hey, it's not my fault we were talking about buttons, all right?
Well, you just forgot to hit the right one.
I'm Paul E. Cooley, and joining me today is Veronica Jaguar and Terry. Oh, my God, I can't keep focused. I'm such a cat mixin'. So now that I've made the introductions to this mess, let's do the small talk segment where you find out what everybody's been up to.
This is our chatting segment where if we had a comfortable segment. Little fire and these little bitty teacups, we could have a simple little intimate chat.
You see, what I need to do is I need to figure out on this thing how to get the audio in the background so I can like get some royalty-free music of violins going in the background while we have our chat and little dishes clinking and things like that.
We ain't that cultured.
Boy, that's the truth.
I mean...
V, what the hell have you been up to?
Oh, gosh. Back to spending way too much time in a bowling alley. That's for sure. Finished recording another project, so yay. Now we get the stage of sending everything off to the engineer, and they are going to have fun because it's a duet narration, which, for those who don't know, that's when you have your female sounding narrator, which is now the preferred way to phrase things. So you have your female sounding narrator read the female character lines, or those that have been designated as such. And then you have your male-sounding narrator read the male-sounding character's lines as designated. And then whichever character has the point of view for that particular scene or chapter, that respective narrator reads. So the majority of the book is from one of two female character points of view. So I have most of the chapter POVs and a whole bunch of dialogue. And then the other narrator, he's recorded all of the male dialogue per the specs for the engineer. And now I get to kind of, you know, shuffle everything together into the right folders and send it off to her and her team so they can cut and paste everything and make it into a book. Yay. Hmm. Yep. It's expensive to do, just for the sheer amount of prep. So, and I prepped the script. I'm very much of the, oh, if I'm going to coordinate this, I want to make sure that the person I'm working with has all the information. So get to play with that. And signing way too many forms for school because Florida is messed up and my kids now need a form for everything. You want to hang out in a teacher's room during lunch? There's a form for that. You want to go to tutoring for a class? There's a form for that.
You want to fill out the forms? There's a form for that.
I can't wait to see which one of you folks in Florida starts feeding all these forms into ChatGPT and has it do all the stuff. I can't wait to see how it happens.
Trust me, I've already been talking with the teachers that I know and have really good relationships with. And they're not getting compensated for all of the paper that they've got to file through. They have to retain copies. School districts are not getting compensated for the copier clicks and the excess paper to print these out. It's a mess. But for my part, I'm just tired of signing freaking forms.
You should have a stamp.
I should. But it's, I mean, it's, I was joking. It's like, you know, the Soviets had to fill everything out in triplicate. And I was told to please not say that in school. It might not be taken as well. I'm like, man.
Forms become easier with vodka.
Now I'm going to be sending a whole bunch to that school.
And now you brought that up, I just have to mention, interject. There is a game called Papers, Please, which takes place in some fictional country called Aristoyska or something like that. Aristotska. And you're a border guard or border.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Let's preemptively say phrasing right now, because once we start talking about border guards on this show, you can already rest assured that it's going to go wrong.
Anyway, your job is to check people's rules, and the rules get more and more complicated, and there's more and more forms to check because there's more stamps people have to have, and then there's like, they can be from such and such country, come in if they have this, that, and the other, but if they're from this country, they need only this, and you have to do all this stuff, and you get graded on how fast you do it.
Someone's gamified bureaucracy.
Exactly. And the guy was like, I did all this traveling in Eastern Europe, you know, before the walls fell and everything else, and I just had to make this game. It's just like,
that does
wow.
not sound like fun.
It is a very challenging game. And then you get the smugglers to try and get through, and you get people with sob stories. And if you let them through, you get dinged, but then you end up getting more money later or some favor. It's a fantastic game. It really is. It's so well done. So well done.
Back in the 80s, I was running a game of Top Secret. Which, you know, this is back in the 80s. So you've got the Soviets and the Eastern Bloc and all of this going on. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends and his brother were the two people playing this game. And I'm playing a border guard. And they're trying to sneak into the country to do spy stuff. And so I asked them, I said, are you here for business or pleasure? And without any hesitation whatsoever, one of them says business, the other one says pleasure. They pause half a second, and then they repeat it the other way around. And I'm like, would you like a minute to discuss this amongst yourselves? Easily one of the most memorable moments as a game master, having them do that, because they talk themselves into this trouble. And I'm just, here we go.
Would you like to discuss this while I pick up the red phone and call security?
You have one more chance to agree on the solution.
That is how you say in America, two strikes?
Yeah, I can totally see that.
And thanks to the workshopping and pitching stuff from last week, I am back to working on this outline and pulling it apart and making it active and actionable. So yay for that.
If you deny everyone, JR, you will get ding, 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 ding all the way down, because you will be denying diplomats. And that doesn't go well.
Yeah. Ask that how that worked out for Prigozhin.
Let's not bring up current events, shall we?
Wow.
Let's not do that. I'll just say that, you know, I'll never fly Aeroflot.
I mean, there's leaping out of windows, and then there's...
That's just a new window.
There's something like the assisted defenestration, you know, to go ahead and settle things out there.
Assisted explosive defenestration?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, when they started talking about how this was originally a plane was shot down by anti-air missiles, and then they were calling it a plane crash, I was like, it's not a crash if you help it happen.
Oh my God. Anyway,
right,
Perry,
so,
what the hell? You broke the show again.
Tag, how has your week been going, Mr. Mixon?
I got a little bit of writing done. I wrote a chapter for Empire today that was basically me responding to my patrons' comments for the chapter last week, going, oh, you can throw this character in, and me going, that character exists? What did I do with that character? Where's he? Oh, yeah, I probably should do something about that, shouldn't I? And then making things up as I went. So that was my writing today. Got that done. Got that put out. I've got a new book coming out tomorrow. So that's nice. It's always nice when a new book comes out. My mortgage always thanks me. I've been cleaning house and getting ready for the treadmill to be delivered. It was supposed to be delivered on Saturday. I spent too much time outside waiting and getting things cleaned up and ready for them to move it into the garage when they got here. And they didn't show up and didn't call. So they'll be along on Monday instead.
That's okay. The pop filter I ordered will get here while the second half of the show is going on, if it doesn't get here after the shows are done. So I read.
Donna's cleaning out some of the stuff down in the living room where she's got stuff up against the wall where we're going to be installing cat furniture there. So I may do that on tomorrow. I may just take that as a day to mount cat furniture downstairs. But we've decided that, you know, once you've got two people living together and they've been living together without a lot of people coming and going, things tend to accumulate. So I'm going to go ahead and spend the next year slowly taking things away from the garage, like the garage that is completely filled with stuff that no one knows really what's in the pile. So I've got lots of things to go ahead and go through. Oh, look at that look of horror on her face.
Yeah, I the few times I've been back to see my parents in Kentucky, the basement has been like accumulated of my siblings who, after they moved out, they went back for a bit, or they left, you know, they left their summer storage there from colleges or what have you, plus Christmas decorations, plus a bunch of things from various moves. And I am one that does not like clutter. It physically causes problems. And so if there's too much clutter around me, I will clean. The house is not like that. I can't walk through I walked through their basement and I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot deal. Maybe I need to fix something.
I won't send you any pictures of in progress in the house.
Oh, no. And that's the thing. It's not like, you know, the closet that I used to use for recording before I built my booth, it needs some tidying before the holidays come. And I've got
to
find it back.
With all the boxes and whatnot we've got, while we're not quite to the hoarder stage of having boxes, you know, it's within sight if you look far enough in the future. So it's time to cut back before we even get close to hoarder.
You'd make Marie Kondo cry.
I don't know who that is, but probably.
Oh, the art of tidying up. If you have to, you know, hold your things and thank them before you let them
there
go.
Will be no there will be no thanking. There will be chunking.
Fair enough.
Ah, dear piece of
my,
shit magazine.
My advice to myself when I'm doing this is, if I haven't seen it in 5 years, I'm probably not going to miss
it. Yeah, if I haven't used
odds are good that it's not going to be something I retain.
Oh, yeah. I concur.
My wife does not agree with that sentiment, so there will be some discussion.
There are some folks who rarely agree with that sentiment, and I'm not going to say anything more than that. Anyway, so sounds like you've been busy then.
Oh, yeah. I have been busy. I'm tired. But, you know, writing's going well. Work around the house is going well. Can't complain. And if I give myself a year to get the house clean, if I do a little bit every trash day, something's going out, then it will get there. And it won't kill me while it's happening. Doing work in the garage right now is painful when it's 100 plus degrees every day.
Doing anything outside, between the hours of 4 a.m. and 7:30, it will not kill you. After that, it gets a little tough for us oldsters.
100 degrees.
Yep. Yeah. And we're getting up to 108 or 110 today, I think.
Really? That high?
Wow. Like that.
That is painful just to think about it.
Yeah. Then add in the humidity.
Wow. I feel bad. It's only 88 degrees here.
But next week will be Sanitary as Donna will throw him away. Yeah. Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. We've been wondering why that has taken so long. That's just me.
I can run faster than she can.
Oh, this is true. This is true. I don't think you're in any danger on that front.
But once she gets her knees done next year, you know, that may be up for grabs.
Hmm. We shall see.
She's having a dual knee replacement next year. Very exciting.
I mean, my mom had one of her knees done, and this was like 5 years ago. But she was like, why did I wait so long? She wishes she would have done it like 10 years earlier. But she did say when she had it done, one thing that really helped the healing was the doctor or the hospital or whatever, rather than having ice packs, she had one of those chill, it was like
the water flowing thing. Yeah.
She said that made a world of difference in helping. So,
Mr. Paul, what are you up to?
Aside from being stalked by a derpy puppy.
Yeah, very derpy. Working on Extinction since Neptune Scars isn't going to be out this year. Basically changed the publishing schedule. So Ancient Trap is already pro-edited. So we just got to wait on affording artwork. And so then we're going to start dropping Evolution, Oceania in Q1, Q2 next year, and Extinction in Q4 on Black Friday. That's the plan. We'll see how that works out. So I'm working through Extinction. I read it soup to nuts, made notes, changed some scenes, threw a couple of things away, added a few things here and there. Now the sucker is over 86.5, and I'm in the part one of the end game. There's going to be three parts, and I have a very bad feeling because we're already at 87, and we're nowhere near this particular battle being done, and it's going to get very obnoxious. And then there's another thing I have to write about a bigger battle that will happen. So there's a lot of things that have to happen. So I think by the time I get done with all of that, we'll be 110 range.
Okay.
But... I haven't finished one subplot that is separate from this, and there's another subplot, which could easily be a 20,000-word prologue.
Yikes.
Who writes 20,000-word prologues?
Paul.
You know what those are called? Those are called reader magnets. That's what a 20,000-word prologue is.
Well, okay, so I said it could be, right? And I agree with you. And actually, I thought about doing it that way, and I may actually end up doing that way for the patrons. But instead, because there's a reason why, and I don't want to give it away yet, people have already read Oceania, probably have a really good idea. But Extinction takes place about, I don't know, 45 days after Leaguer, after the initial incident. Well, something's been going on that they can't possibly have known about for 40 days. And that needs to be told what that is. So it could be done up front, or I can chop it up and I can weave it in and use basically a break, like an interlude deal, do a two or three chapter interlude section with a timestamp on it, relative timestamp, and then move back to the story of now. Which is probably the way I'm going to have to do it. But I have not written any of that yet. So that is still out there. And then there's another 7,000 or 10,000 words on another subplot that I have to somehow address. And then there's another thing I got to handle. So what are we looking at? We're looking at 150 to 160 easy. Because I can't shut the fuck up.
You go, Brandon.
I showed Carrie the proof for... Outbreak, the trade paperback, which I got. So it's going to be for sale. I'll have bundles available for the first three books on my website in a couple weeks, I hope. But she's like, God, this is a really big book. And I was like, it's only 108. It's only 108. Trident was 128. This sucker is going to be like 160, 165. I'm not going to be selling it for $12.99. I can tell you that much. It might be a little more expensive than that. So that's what I've been working on. It's been kind of good to get back to Extinction. I do have one question for this audience, and I doubt anybody here knows, but it's anybody who served know anything about a Boeing AH-6 kind of a light attack helicopter or pursuit helicopter?
The AH-6 is the Cobra gunship.
Then maybe I wrote down the wrong one.
The AH-64 is the Apache.
Well, I know that. Maybe I got the wrong one. No, this is it. No, it's not the Cobra. It's the MH-6 Little Bird.
I thought you said AH-6.
I did. It's based on the MH-6 Little Bird. It's a light helicopter gunship.
Does it look like a little ball?
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's what the Delta Force people use.
Right.
Or at least they did when I was in the service. They used those.
Right. That's the copter I was talking about in the pre-show.
Okay. So what is your question about them?
I just wondered how that thing is going to, or the guns are fixed, I assume.
They go under little pylons
right.
That you
yes.
can mount so that they're above the skid tubes on the side. And you can mount it with the six-barrel 5.56
yeah.
guns,
BAU.
The miniguns on the sides.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also mount it with 2.75-inch rockets. At least back in the day, that's what they used.
It also takes a Gal 50 caliber, which mm-hmm. is three-barreled. And you can do two of those. So
things are very survivable in a crash, by the way.
Oh, really?
Because, at least that's what I was told when I was in the service, is that when they hit, if they come down hard, the tail will break off and the rotors will shatter and the ball tends to roll because it is shaped like a ball and it
yeah.
makes it somewhat more survivable in a heavy impact.
Ooh.
That would
I'm
make sense, though, if it's
that.
A ball because then it's going to distribute whatever force. If mm-hmm. your tail breaks off, then...
Oh,
I never flew in those, but I saw them quite a bit, and I talked with crew chiefs that worked on them.
Oh, my God.
The fact that you can customize what gets mounted underneath, and mm-hmm. you can have
yeah.
it step can break and come apart, and yet still be survivable?
If it's modern day, you probably have some different options. If I remember right, you might have been able back in the old days to mount a... tow anti-tank rocket underneath there. But now you could probably use Hellfire missiles or something like that.
They use a mini tow. So it's basically like a rocket launcher that's like 6 or 8 barrels or 8 shots per.
Have you ever seen a tow rocket? I assure you that they did not have one that could fire 6 or 8 because they're about this big around.
Okay. There was like a mini tow. Tow was used as the acronym that I saw,
You can use a tow rocket that's about this big, or you can get a cylinder that has little holes in it. It looks like it's little perforations. Those are 2.75-inch rockets.
Okay.
So those are definitely different weapon systems, and you'll need to make sure that you get those right because you're
I'm not using
wrong,
either of them.
And then, holy moly, somebody's going to lose their brains.
Well, I'm doing the thing where I'm being as smart as I can, which is giving as few details as I can so that there's less for me to fuck up. That's basically what I wanted. But I imagine that, something could hit that. I saw that it was very light armored, but could take a pretty good shell. So I'm going to have to play with that a little bit. Anyway.
Well, they do have composite armor, but it's limited in what you can take and survive because it has to be able to fly. So
yeah,
don't go too crazy.
I'm not. I'm making this as simple as possible.
Do you know how those things are survivable in combat? It's because your enemy doesn't get a chance to shoot them. those pilots that are trained to fly those craft, they fly so the body of the aircraft is down in the trees, and they're going 100-plus knots. So
those are fast little copters.
You're just zipping through the trees, dodging back and forth. Nobody on the ground can see you for long enough to draw something onto you, and that's how they survive in a fast-moving combat environment. They'll hide down behind hills and come pop it up, shoot you, and then drop back down behind the hill.
Hmm, interesting. All right, good to know. Anyway, that was my big thing, but I was also looking at how you could turn spotlights into UV.
I imagine there's a big old filter you can put across the top that converts.
Actually, everything I saw, if you wanted to make a concentrated beam from a massive LED or halogen, if you want to make it concentrated, you used a concave mirror on it to focus the UV light into a beam. And I was like, that sounds incredibly fucking deadly to M2. And doesn't sound like it would take much engineering to make it work either.
No, probably not.
So that was an interesting little thing to read. So I don't know if it's... I have to do some more research on it, but it gave me some ideas for other weapons that don't involve explosions. So that was kind of nice. But that's what I've been doing. So the 20,000-word prologue, yeah. So I basically... there's three parts of this novel I will have written independently from the main plots. Notice I said main plots. Scary. Anyway,
and let me correct something I said earlier. The Cobra is an AH-1, not a...
AH-1, okay.
Yeah.
All right. One of us wrong. It was
It's me. It's only been, gosh, since the mid-80s when I had anything to do with them.
Yeah, you're allowed to be wrong. You're allowed to be wrong if you had to go back that far in the brain. So, yes. Now, we've gotten that topic taken care of, what I've been up to. Now the question is... Veronica, what in the hell is going on with you?
I already told you.
You brought up topics. We talked about this in the pre-show. You said there's this, that, and the other we want to talk about, blah, 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 and here we are.
You expected to remember what happened half an hour ago?
Honestly? My question was, I saw the topic, don't be Candide. And suddenly I'm whisked back to my sophomore year in high school, having to read Voltaire and wondering why the main character is running around talking to a lady with half a butt cheek. That's the only thing I remember about that. I had to look at, I saw it, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to be prepared. And so in one of my other tabs, I have the Wikipedia entry for Candide open. And I'm like, yep, that's right. Lady with half a butt cheek. I remember that one.
So, Paul, how does her preparation for this match up with my question to you before the show?
All right, say that one more time.
She is way prepared for this.
Yes.
How does that match up with my question to you about the title of the show when we asked it in the pre-show?
It's the difference between knowing somebody who knows how to use Google and a lazy old man.
No, that's not it. I said, who's Candide?
I rest my case. Anyway, I mentioned Candide before, and I mentioned it for a reason. And I brought this up because you mentioned in your... Let me go back and read this real quick, if I can find it. When I asked for topics...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, never mind. I thought that was a topic. You're just going through your outline? Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
How rude. How rude.
Now.
I can't. You're going to kill. What? You just once I get. You'll get yours for killing me off. You'll get yours. You just
Are you still bitter about that? My God.
I didn't know. I'm not bitter. I'm just saying that things will happen.
I have people.
I have characters. And
I have people still asking me to kill them in books, and you're planning on taking it personally?
Here's the answer.
I'm just saying, don't diss my extreme outlining before I write, because...
I'm not.
Instead of killing Paul off in a future
book... I'm not killing him off! He's not dying!
Here's the answer. Instead of killing Paul off, have a sequence of people come and beat his ass during this book. I mean, like, chapter after chapter, somebody is beating Paul's ass.
No matter where you go, there's
no matter where you go, Paul's ass is being beaten.
The reason why I brought up Candide is you mentioned agency and events and making sure people participate in them rather than just getting moved around.
Oh, that's one. I see now. Okay.
You see where I'm going here?
Yes.
So in Candide,
sophomore year of high school,
the whole half a butt cheek thing. Candide was Voltaire making a comment about the absolute ridiculous optimism of the Victorian age, or what age was that?
The Renaissance.
Louis the 14th.
Louis 14th was the Sun King.
Sun King, yeah. Anyway,
Age of Enlightenment.
Age of Enlightenment, thank you. The basically ridiculous optimism. Candide just basically stands there and the world moves around him, which is part of the whole point that Candide was or Voltaire was making. But the thing is, what really makes it funny, dear God, you know, there are rare moments where we try and be serious and have an enlightening conversation.
And then there's Julius.
This cat just needs an intervention. Anyway, basically, while Candide sits there and be's all optimistic that everything's cool and everything's fine, all these things are horrible, awful things are happening to everybody he knows. And then they come back and basically tell him everything's fine. You know, his wife, or his sweetheart, I can't remember if they're married, she gets raped by like 99 sailors and this, that, and the other, but everything's fine. It's basically, he has no participation in any of this that's going on. It's just going on around him. He just bounces from one place to the next. He has no agency, needs no agency. So is the if your intent is to make the character an unwilling bystander to their own lives, which is a trope in and of itself, then you have to have disasters basically pushing them from one place to another and forcing them to take action. And that's part of it. If you've got a character who's not motivated by or can't get past fear or something on those lines, and you need to force them to do something, make a bigger fear happen or have something completely out of you know, the unexpected, basically force them into doing something that they wouldn't otherwise do. But you have to have them do for the damn plot to work.
Yes. And I'll add that at some point, to make a character likable, they have to get to a point where they can't be content with just letting everything else push them. They have to go, you know, I've taken all I can. I can't stands no more. I think that was Popeye. Then, you know, they have to do something, because it's, I know that when I'm reading stuff, having too many things just happen coincidentally, like, oh, this just happened for good or bad. And the character's just like, well, that's life. I guess it's how it has to go. I'm like, you freaking idiot. Like, dumbass. I mean, it's a recipe for a book hitting a wall.
It sounds like that's a great secondary character.
Yes.
Yeah. And actually, that if you think about it, in certain cases, and it depends on what the story is, but if you look at like an Abbott and Costello, which one of them drives? Mm-hmm. And you look at the Three Stooges, who the fuck is driving that train?
That depends on the moment.
And who, exactly. Mm-hmm. And who's along for the ride? When you get into this whole deal, like a Batman and Robin duo and everything else, Batman's driving the story. Robin just kind of is hanging out as the kidnapped child that just happens to go with him wherever.
But in some cases, you can have your main character go through and change, but you can have other characters who are there who don't change, but their presence or just who they are and how they act, they don't change, but they act as a catalyst for that main character to change. So they're enablers.
Well, yeah, okay. That is the right word. That is the right word to use. Not in a negative sense, but in a realistic sense.
No, catalyst or, you know, in a chemical reaction, a catalyst is something you throw in there to cause the reaction to change, but you can pull the catalyst out at the end and nothing's really happened to it.
I like the secondary characters that have some of that. And then basically as story moves around them, they can change, but they don't have to. which is one of the great things about having them, whereas main characters do have to go through some. There's just always going to have the bartender, the smarmy, snarky bartender who shows up in every book. You know, the bookkeeper, the antique book dealer who's really creepy and everything else, that person is not going to change, even if they're in every book.
William West seems to disagree.
He says reactive main characters are valid. Radioactive characters are invalid. I'm so glad we have that pointed out. Give me an example of a reactive character, the main character. If you say Joe versus the volcano, I'll tell you all the reasons you're wrong. That's what I want to see. If the plot pushes, that's great. But they have to react to the plot. They can't just sit there and not do anything. Unless you're making a point. I don't think you can write an entire novel that way.
No, they have to. At some point, the character has to make a choice rather than just be a victim of their circumstance.
Right. I think that's a better way of looking at it. I think that's a much better way of looking at it. Characters in Parasite.
I'm not sure that I know that one.
It's recent. I haven't seen it, but
is that the one that's based on the South Korean one that's about the dude that's really based on an old English horror movie from the 1960s that's really based on who the fuck knows what? Pushed along with little agency. That is most disaster movies. That is most disaster movies. And
I want to argue that point because I thought about mentioning any disaster movie as that. And those characters still have agency. They are trying to overcome the environment, and any fight against the environment is going to be that way. But they are making choices that are life and death choices. They may be running from something, but they're going to be presented with obstacles that they have to work at overcoming. Mm-hmm. And they are going to be presented with quandaries of, do I save this other person? Do I save myself?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's no, that part is, but basically there's an external point in the world that is pushing and interfering with everything. That is the main villain, the main antagonist is the environment. By and large, at least as far as I've considered disaster films and books and whatnot. Which if Tim was here, there's no telling what he would tell me. But there you go. Anyway, there's ways to cut it and this, that, and the other. And there's ways to write it right. I'm just saying it's a lot easier if you have characters who have a defined goal to do something.
Mm-hmm. Or you can, caveat, this is something I always struggle with. And so while I'm reworking stuff, I am sitting there looking at every scene I've got saying, okay, what is the active choice that my character is making? You know, are they choosing to do this versus this? Even if it's, I'm choosing to walk away because she's pissed off. And if I stay here, she's going to hurt me. And I don't want to be hurt.
Or was the choice made for them?
Exactly. In some cases, you know, the choice is made for you because I have another character who pretty much gets thrown on a ship and gets taken to another medical station. The choice is made for her because, the explosion cut off access to that station's, you know, medical services. And the other characters decide, well, we can get her stable if we get to another spot, so put her on the ship. And she's not exactly conscious at that point. So can she make a choice? No, but later on, she can decide if she wants to yell at them for removing her from her crew, or thank them for saving her, stay with them, go back to the other station, find another crew. But even though she didn't have a choice at that one point, she can still choose her own path. Right. And if she is stuck in an impossible situation, she can still choose how to react.
JR asks, is surviving a defined goal, Paul, that is most horror movies out there. I disagree completely. You're watching shitty horror movies. The defined goal usually has nothing to do with survival until 45 minutes into the film. If it's a good movie. Go look at Smile. Go look at Sinister. Go look at those films where none of that shit's there. The good horror films don't necessarily have a clock where everybody knows within 5 minutes they're going to die if they don't do something. Those movies are out there, and there are a lot of them, but those are not the ones I want to read or watch. Those aren't my faves. I want to get to know the characters, and I want to give them reasons. Now, they may ultimately have to run for their lives and use ingenuity to fight, and that is part of survival, but I try and give them as much as possible winnable goals. That's what makes it fun.
And your stakes are going to rise. If you start out with your stake of being, you know, shit's going to hit the fan, you have to survive, then how do you ratchet things up from there if that's your page 10?
Yeah, we watched Terrifier 2 last night, and I just felt nothing really important about it. It was basically, the kills got nastier, but did they really affect me? No. It was just splatter gore, and it really just didn't have any effect. I got so totally desensitized to it. I was just like, why the fuck am I watching this? Which is unfortunate because they had a cool clown. Holy fucking shit, was it terrifying. And a cool idea, but they did, in my humble opinion, it could have been carried off so much better. So much better. And they probably could have shortened the movie by about 55 minutes, which made it worse. So anyway, there's ways to do it right, and there's ways to do it wrong. And it just depends on how you do things. But if you look at the best horror, you get a chance to know the character, especially if it's psychological. You get a chance to know the character even while shit's happening, even while they're going insane, because they don't start out insane. That's no fun. You have to, because how do you raise the stakes from that? Once you go completely shit bat bonkers, where do you go from there? You know, there's some rules there as how to write it. I mean, you can choose to break them as you will, as you want. But there are ways to do it that makes it very suspenseful for folks. And horror works best if you love the characters, if you have some emotional attachment to them, if you somehow empathize with them, then whatever happens to them is going to bother you. And that's part of the thrill of it is getting that feeling that goes along with that. So, and then you have to trust that the writer's not going to totally fuck you over by loving that character.
In a horror movie, that's pretty much guaranteed.
Well, I mean, think about it, though. There's certain things like Brett and I were talking about this last night. Final girls. You always have a goddamn final girl or final boy in a fucking slasher movie. It's the weak one that starts out this, that, and the other, you know, blah, 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 ends up killing the monster or is the only one surviving. It's a tired old trope, and it comes back again and again and again and again. And it's predominantly women, which is just, I'll leave it at there. But the fact is that is the trope of that entire genre, is that there's going to be a final guy, you know, final guy or final girl. And the ones where I've seen it broken were ensemble final folk. So it's basically all the different people who are going to be victims. The only way they can survive is to come together and beat the monster. And it works. That worked really well for me. I liked it. So it's just something that kind of thing takes place in applies to suspense and thriller and mystery as well. You know, you get to love the characters. You get to love God help you, a Miss Marple or, you know, Inspector Frost or whomever, a Dresden. You keep reading because you love them. You read the books because you love them and because what happens. You love the quips that they make, the little offhand anecdotes that they have when they're talking to minor characters. They love you. The readers are going to love you for those minor characters and the secondary characters to give those hilarious beats in the middle of what something is so serious. There's just so much to do and so many things to play with. And when you're telling yourself these stories, I think it really makes, excuse me, it's really, you're missing an opportunity if you ignore those moments when you have an opportunity to use them. I think it's just something to pay attention to because as a reader, I really enjoy those. Really enjoy those. Anyway, I'll step off my soapbox now. Sorry, I got away from myself. What were we talking about?
I had a thought, Terry. So you've got in your Empire of Bones series, you've got, you know, spoilers, if y'all haven't read it, then what's wrong with you? Or listened to it, what's wrong with you? But you've got Kelsey, and as I have put it in all of my script notes, not Kelsey. And so you've got two people who maybe, you know, one reacted differently to the circumstances presented to her. And they're both, I'm not sure if you can say that they're equal characters in how they reacted, but definitely it's a good illustration of how, you know, the different choices, active choices, define the character.
Mm.
Yes, no, fishcakes.
Fishcakes.
Well, in a lot of cases, not Kelsey didn't have any agency in what happened to her. A lot of the things that happened to her, she got the dirty end of the stick. And
she was assaulted.
Hmm?
She was assaulted.
Well, it's not even just that. They were both assaulted. But one of the means in which it happened, not Kelsey, was left in that environment for weeks before she was rescued.
Oh, okay. All
when right. she was saved, she had gross physical damage that she had to have a mechanical eye. She was messed up physically and mentally much worse than Kelsey was. And she didn't have the same kind of support structure because Jared in her universe was the enemy, not her friend. So she had to go it alone rather than without having somebody standing behind her. She didn't have a Talbot. She didn't have a Jared. In what I wrote that character, I said, how can I take all of Kelsey's support away and what would be left?
Yeah, that's actually a good way to do that. In fact, I think if you're struggling to find a character, that's a beautiful way to do it too.
Mm-hmm.
I really do think that is a great way to do that, is imagine this character and then strip away all the things that were central to their core and look at the gibbering wreck you have, even if it's got the same skill set. How it uses the skill set changes.
Or if you're writing a series and you're trying to figure out what to do next, take something away. Just, they'd be miserable if you did that.
They'd be miserable if their father died. Let's do that.
If a character is counting on their sidekick, you know, hey, my sidekick has that special van that gets me to point A to point B. We can deal. What do you mean he's out of town visiting his sister? What?
What do you mean he's dead?
What do you mean it's got a blown engine seal? What do you mean?
What do you mean he's been saddled with a contagious flesh-eating bacteria and you were having lunch with him yesterday?
What do you mean he's got very, very, very contagious herpes? What does that even mean?
Space herpes, no less.
Space herpes.
Brett says, I think Terrifier 2 is purposefully not complicated. I think it's a blank canvas for the clown guy to do what he does.
No, that was do what he do.
It was something only
do
a movie.
What he do.
It was only something a do movie could do. Get away with, books can't. That is the important bit.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree. There are certain things that movies can get away with that books can't, because movies are a visual medium and you can count on your audience to kind of fill in a little bit more, or to use, you know, sound and lighting and setting to fill in more.
William West says, the only short story I ever got published has a nearly entirely reactive protagonist. Yes, rules are different for short stories. I think we're really discussing long fiction more than anything else.
I'm not sure that I agree with that sentiment. A lot of things are different about short stories. Reactive characters, I'm not sure that that's different between long and short fiction.
I'd have to see. Press the wrong one. I have to see exactly. I guess I'd have to know the scenario, but I can see certain portions of, if you have short fiction, you don't have time to fuck around. So
I think in short fiction, your characters have to have more agency, not less. They've got to be more go-getters because you don't have time to dither and wait for the waves to wash them into shore.
Oh, yeah, you do. You've got plenty of time. You can have the person just sitting out there floating in the goddamn ocean, knowing they're dying, and the entire
sitting
short story takes place there.
Sitting on a dock by the bay, watching my short stories plot swing away.
You know, I don't have too many auditory nerves left.
There's a reason I don't sing. So
fucking
there,
killing
that.
Them. Just telling
wow.
you.
Wow. Harsh.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute, JR. Space Herbie's brought to you by Terry Mixon's extracurricular activities. Now, okay. Do we have to brainstorm space herpes now? Is that where we have descended to in this show?
No, that's just where JR wants to take the show. We don't have to go where JR wants to go.
No.
William says Terry's dulcet tones are something I didn't expect. Yeah.
No one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Nobody expects Terry to sing.
Hey, at least they hope I don't.
I want to hear your best Donna Summers impression right now. What's funny is I can't think of a single Donna Summers song right now. I can't think of a single one.
Really?
Isn't it R-E-S-P-C-T?
No, that's Aretha Franklin.
No, that's Aretha Franklin.
I don't know either.
Holy shit. Oh my God.
I don't know that much about singers and music either.
Oh my gosh.
You know, it's one thing to be old. It's another thing to be old and completely oblivious to everything that happened when you were alive.
I mean, Donna Summer, she works hard for the money. I mean,
she works hard for the money, so you better treat her right.
Wow, my voice is worse than usual. That's amazing.
Your voice is actually worse than mine, and that's really going a ways.
Well, it doesn't help that I'm trying to, you know, change an octave that I have no business trying to capture.
Yeah, I'm watching the list of songs that he's going down here, and no one wants to hear me singing Hot Stuff. Honestly, no, they do not.
Next on DRS After Dark, Terry dresses up as Donna Summers and does his favorite impression. I can't wait to see you in that wig, man. Plus the glitter. It's going to be sweet.
No MacArthur Park, Brett. What you can't deal with like 12 minutes of this.
What have you been smoking, Paul? I don't think you should share it, whatever it was.
I'm currently watching.
Oh, there we go. Mention. That's here the answer. Go.
There we go.
For those listening and unable to read the stuff that has popped up, Chris Moody made the suggestion to have Oscar the Grouch do Donna Summer's Hot Stuff.
Looking for some hot stuff, baby, this evening. I need some hot stuff, baby, tonight. I want some hot stuff, baby, this evening. Gotta have some hot stuff, gotta have some... I remember that song. That's enough.
You know... Instead of saying hot stuff, you should change it to hot sauce and it would fit the Grouch a little bit better.
I need some hot sticks.
Ooh. Hot sticks.
Stitch? Hot? For a bunch of Muppets. What is hot stitch?
I'll let you figure that out. Oh my
God.
Yeah, I'm really concerned.
I think you should be.
I mean, and now the only way I can segue into that is just to start the Phenomena thing.
And we can't do that because therein lies madness.
Maybe you should do the Phenomena thing, but only do it in Donna Summer's voice.
Oh, my God.
Phenomena.
No, I can't do it, dude. I can't do it. I don't have...
The beat is not very disco. I don't think...
No, I have no rhythm either. It doesn't help. I always wanted to be a drummer, but I lack one important thing. What's that? Rhythm.
Brett says,
that was the only instrument I learned how to play. I was a drummer many, 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 many years ago.
So Brett says, Donna Summer medley was not on my DRS bingo card. I want to see this DRS bingo card. I truly want to know what kind of things they're waiting for us to do. Oh, my God.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Fran Drescher's a national treasure.
Oh, no, she's not. She hurts my ears.
Not if she has to sing Hot Stuff, I don't think.
She's the current president of SAG-AFTRA. Thank you very much.
I don't give a fuck. That's great. Tell her to shut the fuck up. lives.
Well, oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
The woman made money with her voice.
She did.
She did.
So, I mean, there are certain character acting things that were...
Hi, I'm Gilbert Gottfried.
That's exactly. Kind of
thing. And I'm going to play this goose that does insurance. Until I get fired because I said something I shouldn't.
Russ's friend Russia was negotiating for the whole union with that voice.
No wonder the negotiations have broken down.
It's not that high pitched. I mean, in the usual stuff, but
oh God,
the accent is right funny. There. It's awesome. But
it is so hot in my office, it's ridiculous. I'm sweating in here. I'm getting the vapors. Y'all have been so passionate.
It's all the Fran Drescher voices that's got you going.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly.
Does it for me every time, man. I had such a crush on her.
I'm sure that if you go out on the internet, you can go ahead and find, you know, porn clips that are dubbed in her voice. Rule 34.
Oh, my God. That noise is an orgasm? Oh, my God. No.
You know, we were talking about the button that turns it off and then on again. I think I may have just found it.
Oh, yeah. I'll flash it for life. You know, that's just... Wow.
Here's your hashtag for this episode, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else. And everyone.
Flaccid for
y'all,
life.
All y'all. There we go.
All y'all.
All y'all.
Oddly, not on my DRS bingo card.
Gotta make a bonus card, Brett. Gotta have all of it there. Man.
Yeah, we may have jumped the shark. It's, you know, 3 minutes
jumped?
To go here.
That's jumping the shark? Out of everything else that has been discussed, that's jumping the shark?
No, I believe that may be driving up the ramp and having it stall of the upswing and just landing in the pool. There's no jumping the shark. You're in the pool with the shark.
Is that a bad thing? You don't know, do you? You don't know. Well, if you know something, you can... Oh, shit. Before I start that. What is this? I still remember seeing Andy Serkis reading Trump tweets as Gollum. I wonder why that's coming to mind. I wonder. But if you have a comment about this show, you can send an email to show@devrobotsociety.com. You can find me on Mastodon at @Paul_E_Cooley at @VYRSE.social. You can find us on Facebook at the listeners of the Dead Robot Society Facebook group where Terry mangles all the madness. You can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/DRS podcast to see way too damned many cats and other things that are going on. And you can participate in the chat. We'd love to see you. And if you want to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/DRS podcast and buymeacoffee.com/DRS podcast, where for as little as $1 a month, you get access to exclusive live shows like DRS After Dark, which is coming up in just a few minutes, 12 minutes to be exact. And at the $10 level, you get your name read. And our $10 patrons are Tony L. Joy, Lisa Slack, Isabel Cushy, and Tim Niederreiter. Thank you to all of our patrons for making this show possible. And now we have one more thing we got to take care of before we get going. That's to admit we are caffeine junkies. And we get our caffeine from CorpseCoffee.com. Visit CorpseCoffee.com. Check out their webcomic. They're wonderfully weird webcomic. They're wonderfully weird coffees. They're rave coffees and boutique teas. And tell them DRS sent you. Visit CorpseCoffee.com and get the dead in your cup.
Oh, my God. Get the dead in your cup.
Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus fucking... Why did you bring that up? I had forgotten that human existed. Why did you bring that up?
You sounded like Bert.
Bert?
Ernie and Bert?
I don't remember them ever making that sound.
Well, that's because Ernie, you never had them in the same bed together.
Mm. How, you know what? I'm not even going to go there. There's like copyright infringement and all sorts of shit. I'm staying the fuck away from it. So with that, we are going to get out of here. Thank you for joining us. And hope you guys have a great rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week at 3 p.m. CST on the YouTubes. Until then, be safe. Have a good one. And now we get to sit here and wait for the end broadcast to end. It's annoying as hell.